This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for conversation with an Emmy Award-winning actor, the latest scoop from the Louisiana Philharmonic Orchestra as it prepares to take you to new musical heights, or a mind-blowing play that will have you questioning what is normal. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. John Larroquette is a native New Orleanian, having grown up in the city's Ninth Ward. He is a major star in film, television, and live theater. He was in the Crescent City last week to receive an honorary Doctor of Humane Letters from the University of New Orleans. The actor took a moment to drop by our studios and talk with WWNO's Paul Mawson, who first asked him the impact of his multi-Emmy-winning role as attorney Dan Fielding in the TV hit series Night Court, which aired on NBC from 1984 to 1992.
Well, it's a seismic event in any actor's life to, you know, you start off just trying to get as many jobs as you can, as often as you can, and then something like that comes along, which at the time when you do it is just another job. It's just a pilot for a television series. And, you know, you in those days, and it's still basically the same, even though it's just a pilot, you make a deal in case it goes to series. You make a deal for 5 years or 7 years in those days. So you're sort of like a ball player getting hired to be on a team. But you do the pilot, you go away, and you sit around and wait, and then it gets picked up. And so it's a slow incline. Yeah. You know, you get on the air, and we were a mid-season replacement in that season, 84, I guess, January 84 we started. And it kept growing, and all of a sudden, it's, you know, it was number one. And then it was put on the Thursday night lineup as part of that NBC lineup in those days in the 80s that it Cosby and Us and Cheers and Family Ties and... It just keeps going and gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And it finally, you realize that it is, in some ways, a gilded cage to be on a series, particularly with a character that's kind of indelible in a way, you know, like Don Knotts was in Mayberry, that it becomes, it's never a curse. It's always a blessing. But it starts to become like, oh, is this it? Am I stuck in this now? So it's... You know, you start starting to bite the hand that feeds you a little bit on any long-running series, I think. But 90% of it was just spectacular to be part of that, to have that kind of success, to have that kind of recognition. And in the first 5 years or so, that kind of work, because the writers were great. Reinhold Wiggy, who created it, was very funny, and I added whatever I could to it.
If you had to say, what were the things that New Orleans, you know, helped you or aided you in preparing you for the grand career that you've had, What would you say?
I would think that I used to describe New Orleans as, you know, the times when I was a boy when theaters tried to become, have a foothold here other than Le Petit or Gallery, when the New Orleans rep come, you know, the streets are theater. The city is filled with pageantry and over-the-top behavior all the time. And that, I'm not just talking about the drunken tourists from Oklahoma. Right. But where I grew up in the Ninth Ward, I mean, people, you know, worked on their Mardi Gras costumes all year, and parties all the time. And Kevin actually sent me a picture of a St. Joseph altar, and I've talked about that so much in my life, going to the backyards of people's homes and on St. Joseph's Day. So I think that it gave me a taste for the outlandish, that being a little above normal is acceptable. And it's a gregarious kind of place to grow up in, and one that allows you a degree of improvisation in your life that I think is beneficial to be an actor, for sure.
You play, if I understand, have played clarinet and saxophone? Is that right? That
as
was
a child.
Before you decided to go into acting?
Yeah, I euphemistically say at 17 I realized I could talk better than I could blow.
So you could have been a musician.
Could have been, and both of my sons are. Both of our sons are. My wife is here with me, too, Elizabeth. Both of our sons are musicians, and I was good. I was a good cold reader, but at you know, somewhere around 16, 17, I realized that I didn't have whatever that was, that to become a Marsalis or a Pete Fountain, who I was a hero of mine as a child. As a matter of fact, then I got to live that because Johnny Carson asked me to host the Tonight Show, and I did, and I got to choose the guest. So I had Pete Fountain flown out from New Orleans to be the musical guest on the one airing of the Tonight Show that I hosted. But I wasn't great. I don't think I wasn't great. I didn't have that improvisational a gene that I think I have with words, right, with acting. So I sort of just drifted away from it.
For live theater, doing something like how to succeed in business without really trying. Okay, there's something that has been a movie. It's been on stage. How do you approach something that is a well-known work? And you're also working with someone very well-known, Daniel Radcliffe. As well.
Yeah, you just approach it as what's on the page is what's on the stage. You know, Jason Robards said that. If it's not on the page, it's not on the stage. So I didn't think about it at all. I thought about the – and listen, for me also, Broadway debut in a musical. I've never sung on stage. I never danced on stage. So I was petrified and so concentrated on learning the steps of the dances and trying to remember the tunes of the songs. I told the director, I said, listen, I'm not going to be funny for weeks, so don't even think about any humor in this thing. I've got to get this down first. And so that freed me up. Once I knew those, once I felt confident in that, then I could concentrate on the relationship and got to be so free with it that my task most nights was to try and figure out what I could say that wasn't in the script to crack Daniel Radcliffe up on stage, and succeeded almost every night.
That was victory, right?
Absolutely. And I would sometimes crack him up, and certainly crack the audience up, because it got to be known that I was kind of screwing around a little bit. So that's how shows you how comfortable I finally got with the whole process.
Would you sneak in Harry Potter jokes and things like that?
Never.
Okay. That was a line,
and right, that was my personal line. Right. But it happened one night, and I didn't even realize that it happened. There's a sequence that happens in a dance number that he and I do, and he's a con man, right? So he makes a statement that makes my character think, oh, wait a minute, he and I went to the same college, Groundhog. And he says something, and I go, my line in the play is, wait a second, mister, or whatever I say in the line. Are you saying you're a groundhog? So every night I would change that. One night it was, hey, Mighty Mouse, wait a minute, or Popeye. I would use cartoon characters of the day. Right. And so because the play is in the early 60s. And so I was one night sitting in my dressing room thinking, all right, what am I going to say tonight? They went, I know. Because one of my favorite shows when I was a boy, right, on television. So I got to go on stage. We do the number. And I turn to him and I say, wait a second, Mr. Wizard. Thinking of Mr. Wizard, the science guy on television, not even thinking, wait a minute, he played Harry Potter. And so the audience goes berserk. And I go, well, that landed pretty good. They really know Mr. Wizard. And I looked at Daniel, and when I saw his eyes look at me, I realized, I just made a Harry Potter reference, which I would never have done on purpose. And he could not stop laughing. And so we stood there for a good 35, 40 seconds trying to recover, myself cracking up that I had done that completely unintentionally.
Comedy, you hear dying is easy, comedy is hard.
Yeah.
And you've built a successful career on it. What's the key? How did it come to you, I should say? Were you always funny, or was it something that you developed?
What are you saying?
I'm not saying anything.
I'll give you a prime example. I want you to ask me a question.
Okay.
And the question I want you to ask me is, what is the most important thing in comedy?
What is
timing?
I'm sorry, I wasn't in the
zone.
I don't know.
You know, I think it's the ability to withhold for a specific amount of time that's different every time what the audience is expecting you to do and give it to them when they're not expecting it. You know, the old vaudeville rule was you tell the audience what you're going to do, you do it, you tell the audience you did it. And I think there's something in comedy about that, of giving them what they expect but not when they expect it.
We have some young actors listening, deciding they want to be like John Larroquette. They idolize you. They want to follow in your footsteps. What do you want to tell them?
I don't have any advice except act. However, if you've got to pay to do it, then, you know, if it doesn't cost too much money, pay to do it, and just keep acting. You know, because you never know when it's going to happen. Persistence, I think, is almost more important than talent. And you'll go through, if you're lucky, the five stages of an actor's career. And those are John Who, get me John Larroquette, get me a John Larroquette type, get me a young John Larroquette, John Who. And if you're lucky, you'll have all five of those.
Truly star of stage, screen, and television, John Larroquette. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
That's actor John Larroquette speaking with WWNO's Paul Mawson. You can hear the full interview on our website at WWNO.org. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. Two big leadership announcements from the symphony. Maestro Carlos Miguel Prieto signs on for a 5-year engagement with the Louisiana Philharmonic Orchestra, and James William Boyd takes on the position of CEO. Boyd, a native of Oregon, came from the Tucson Symphony Orchestra and has served as LPO Interim Managing Director since July 2012. Gentlemen, welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thanks for having us, Diane.
Thank you.
This is such great news.
Carlos and I think, make a pretty darn good team, and looking forward to the next 5 years together.
Now, you came on board in 2011, James?
Yes, I moved here to New Orleans in November 2011 to start as the Artistic Planning Director with the orchestra, and over the summer stepped in as Interim Managing Director, and that's now progressed to permanent CEO.
What are your thoughts on becoming the new CEO?
I'm very excited. I mean, to be honest, for most of the season, it'd be hard to tell the difference between what we've been doing for the last 8 months and what will now happen, mostly because we have a very supportive organization and they've treated me as if I were the permanent CEO all along. So I've been very appreciative to them for that. But it does give a stamp of approval, and I think that especially with our patrons and funders now, we can move forward knowing that there is permanent leadership in place.
Can you tell us what your goals are for the organization?
I want to engage with the board, the musicians, Carlos, the staff, to come up with really the next phase for the orchestra. We have a couple landmark points that are coming forward. One is our 25th anniversary. That'll be in the 15-16 season. And then also the 300th anniversary of the City of New Orleans in 2018. So I think we're going to put our planning efforts around those 2 points and see where the orchestra can grow. Most of us have pretty strong ideas about what we want to see happen with the orchestra. A permanent home for the orchestra in New Orleans is definitely one of them. And also always working to improve musician salaries so that we can not only recruit great talent to the city, but retain them.
You've been performing at venues in several areas since Katrina destroyed the Orpheum. What is the status of that, and when do you think you might be in a permanent home?
One of the things coming out of Katrina is that the orchestra really embraced a regional mindset, and I don't foresee that ever changing. It's been one of the keys to the success that we have a very strong presence on the North Shore. We go to places like Thibodaux, and I see that further and further expanding so that we can claim that regional aspect of the orchestra's activities. But then at the same time, locally, I mean, we are based in New Orleans. It is our primary home. We want to do a few things. One, to identify with more of the local culture so that when you see the LPO in concert, you'll recognize some other faces from the diverse musical culture that we have here incorporated into our programming. But then also in terms of a home, next season we're moving into Mahalia Jackson Theater with our classic series. So all 12 programs will be there as opposed to traveling around the city in various venues. So that's a huge change for us. It really is the first time we've had a home since the hurricane. I think we would all love to be back in the Orpheum someday, but this is a great step to take for now.
And Carlos, the upcoming season will be your 8th with the LPO. What can we look forward to?
I think we have a great season next year. If you are going to take my recommendation, I would say don't miss a concert. We start with Gil Shaham, one of the most incredible violinists of today, and he's going to perform the Barber Violin Concerto, which is, I think, undoubtedly the great American violin concerto. He owns that piece. He really plays that like nobody else. And Vadim Glutzman is coming back. He's been a favorite of mine for a long time and seems to have become a favorite around the world, but he always leaves some time for us here. Another violinist, Karen Gomio, also fabulous, and also is a world-renowned violinist. Benedetto Lupo, Italian pianist, who was our first soloist after Katrina. He performed both of the Ravel piano concertos the April immediately after Katrina in Dixon Hall in an incredible concert. It was an all Ravel concert.
That's incredible. It's an incredible place where we live.
I think so.
Without doubt.
So, James, tell me, will we see any new programs on the horizon?
We are expanding the number of what we call concert specials, which in other places are probably most often called the pops. And we're expanding those next season, almost doubling the amount of shows that we're doing, bringing into town Music of the Doors with Randy Jackson, a local favorite, Cirque de la Symphony, which has been very popular in, around the country, and this is the first time that it'll have been brought to New Orleans with us. The other big change for next season, and this is still a little bit in the works, but we are very much hoping that we're returning to Slidell and to Hammond with a different, more laid-back, casual classic series and taking the orchestra's programming all the way around the lake by doing so.
It sounds like we're headed for a great season.
Well, I have to say that since you introduced James at the beginning of the interview, he's really a fabulous guy. It's not because we work together, and normally in the position that we are, there is actually kind of sometimes a little bit of tension because artistic wants to go one way and management wants artistic not to go too crazy. But I think that here both of us share first and foremost the passion for music. James is a clarinetist. James is somebody who has gone through the ranks of orchestras, and people like James have this incredible passion for the music and also this managerial abilities. We're lucky to have him.
Well, I can't let him say all that and not respond to it. It's extremely kind words. One of the great things about working with Carlos, as you can hear, this commitment to artistic integrity. And that is shared, I think, throughout the organization, as you said, but it's a lot of that's due to your leadership.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you very much.
We've been talking with James William Boyd, the new CEO of the Louisiana Philharmonic Orchestra, and Maestro Carlos Miguel Prieto. Prieto's tenure with the LPO continues through the 2018-2019 season. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Southern Rep Theater takes on the issue with Brian Yorkie and Tom Kitt's powerhouse musical Next to Normal, starring Broadway veteran actress and New Orleanian Leslie Casté. Leslie, welcome to Inside the Arts.
Hi, thanks. It's great to be here.
Well, congratulations on your new role in Next to Normal.
Thank you.
What drew you to this role of a suburban housewife battling mental illness?
Well, I can't imagine the similarities, but no, actually, I saw the production when it was in previews before it opened on Broadway, and I think in 2009, and I really went into the show just not really knowing what the storyline was about. I knew it was about a sort of dysfunctional suburban family, and I had known several of the cast members, and on that recommendation, I went to see it, and it just profoundly affected me and profoundly moved me. First of all, the score is a wonderful rock and roll score. And for a chance to play a suburban mom singing rock and roll is a great, great opportunity. So you see me in my cardigan set really wailing these great high belting rock and roll songs. And it's a wonderful show. It's about a sort of quote unquote normal family that is dealing with the mom's battle with mental illness. She's been diagnosed as bipolar manic depressive. And through the course of the show, you sort of find out the reasons and her past history and her dynamics with her family and her children. She's got two teenage children, and just the ripple effects that her mental illness has on their relationships. And as they try to cope with keeping everything in a normal frame, trying to give their children a normal life, you sort of ask questions about what really is normal and the definition of normal. It's a very intriguing subject matter to deal with.
Now, this is a Pulitzer Prize winning musical.
Yes, it won the Pulitzer Prize in, I think, 2010. It's only one of, I think, eight musicals to actually win the Pulitzer Prize. I think Rent won it several years ago. And as we were in rehearsal, we started to see more and more the way it's so intricately crafted. It's very multi-layered, and there are very multiple meanings. It fits together like the pieces of a puzzle. There are only six characters. There's the four members of the family. There's the mother, the father, the son, and the daughter. We have the daughter's boyfriend, and we have the psychiatrist. And we are all pieces of this wheel that sets the story in motion, and every character has an amazing journey from start to finish. the character that I play, Diana Goodman, has a real sort of dry sense of humor about her predicament. She's aware that she's mentally ill. She has been diagnosed bipolar for 16 years. So this is a long roller coaster, a journey that she is on trying to manage her treatment.
So how did you prepare yourself for this role?
Mainly reading memoirs of people who had bipolar. There was a wonderful book called Madness, A Bipolar Life by Myra Hornbacher. Wonderful memoir. And it sort of took me inside of the head of someone afflicted with bipolar. I sort of was able to click into that normalcy within the abnormalcy. And I love the title, Next to Normal. It is not quite normal, but it's something next to normal. And that can be okay, too.
Why do you think local audiences will connect with this work?
I think there is a level of dysfunction in every family. And I think there's great common ground with people trying to see how families survive and persevere.
Now, you've been a mainstay in New Orleans theater for a while now, but you spent 20 years in New York City.
I did. So I made my living as an actress and singer on Broadway and television commercials. And when I moved back to New Orleans to be closer to my family here, it was right before Katrina. I always thought there was great timing in my career. But we stayed. There was no question of ever leaving New Orleans once we decided to make the move. And I've been very blessed to be able to continue to perform and to act. There are wonderful opportunities here. It's been the best of both worlds.
What are you hoping folks will take away from this latest production?
It's just such a great piece that opens doors to discussion and dialogue, and it makes people really think, and I think they'll take the show away with them for several days after seeing it, and that's what I love.
Yeah, it'll be great if it opens up conversations in the city.
It's a great outreach to people who really normally wouldn't go to the theater to see a piece like this, and that can maybe move them to maybe seek help if they have someone in their family or in their life that would need some medical help.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Well, Leslie, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you so much. I hope you enjoy the show. And tranquil years,
seems they've dried up all my tears. New Orleans actress Leslie Casté stars in Southern Rep Theater's production of Next to Normal, with performances running at the CAC 900 Camp Street through June 9th. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at wwno.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go inside the arts. I'm Diane Mack.